The many meanderings of the first Gen X man. Excellent.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you, fake audience. Thank you so much. You know, someday a fairy will give me a wish and I'll promise to turn all of you into a real audience, like Pinocchio. And then we'll all get eaten by a whale. It'll be fun. Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. I am, of course, your audio pal and chief meanderer, Will Boudreau. Episode 6? How is that even possible? Time sure does fly when you're trapped in an endless nightmare of anxiety, uncertainty, civil unrest, and near constant snacking. Hey, honey, look what's on the news now. I think I'm going to go to the supermarket and pick up some Oreos. And I think we're out of beer, again. Attention, stressed-out ShopRite shoppers. This week, we've got great deals on food to self-medicate with during the pandemic. This week in our bakery department, we have chocolate frosted brownies, only $3.99. Or maybe you'd just like to gnaw on some sticks of ShopRite butter, only $1.99. And if you're really stressed out, we've got Pillsbury chocolate chip cookie dough you could just squeeze right into your mouth like a big toothpaste tube. This week, only $2.99. Thank you for shopping at ShopRite for all your stress-eating needs, and have yourself an exceptional day. But despite the world being completely upside down right now, we have one thing to be thankful for. The abject horror that was online school is over, and it's finally summer! Anyway, happy apocalypse July 4th, everyone. I hope you all had a happy and safe holiday weekend. We may or may not have had a small fireworks display in our yard that may or may not have included fireworks that may or may not be exactly legal in the great state of New York. But at the end of the weekend, many hot dogs were eaten and no fingers were blown off, so it all ended well. This week, we'll be talking all about a tradition that will sadly be absent from pretty much all of our lives this summer. The Great American Amusement Park. Excuse me, I just got a tiny little bit nauseous thinking about this ride I went on last summer at Lake Compounds in Connecticut. That's a very nice place which bills itself as the country's oldest amusement park. This particular ride was called the Zoomerang, which is apparently German for puke machine. I went on it with my 13-year-old son, and it didn't look that bad from the ground, but when it took us up to the starting position, which basically put us a few hundred feet in the air, looking straight down at the ground, I realized that the Zoomerang wasn't my jam. So, I shut my eyes for the entire ride, and my son realized I wasn't a fearless superhero after all. Another bravest dad in the world moment that I had was when I completely chickened out while standing at the edge of a high diving board at a public pool and did the climb of shame back down the very long ladder. When I got to the bottom of the ladder, I realized that there was a little girl who was about 5, waiting impatiently. She was about 2.5 feet tall, silently mocking me in her mermaid bathing suit. She danced right up that ladder that I, a fully grown adult, had just nervously slunk down. Then that little peanut of a girl ran right off that high dive, her pink inflatable arm rings leaving pink streaks in the air as she soared off triumphantly, like a mini Wonder Woman. Yep, all 4 of my sons witnessed that proud moment. The next week, we went back to that same pool, and my boys completely shamed me into jumping off the high board that time. I did it. Once. And in the process, gained absolutely no respect back. Once your dad is outbraved by a 5-year-old girl, there is no coming back. But hey, I'm still a hero and I buy everybody ice cream. My first memory of amusement park rides was a big event every summer in my town. the Maynard Town Carnival, held in a town park called Crow Park. And my first memory of the town carnival is being terrified, not of a ride, but of being lost in a crowd. It was at that carnival that I let go of my dad's hand and walked on ahead, dazzled by the excitement happening all around me. I turned around and realized my parents weren't there. I was lost. Immediately, a huge sinking feeling in the pit of my gut took over my whole body, and I stood in the middle of the crowded carnival midway, paralyzed. It only lasted maybe 15 seconds, and then my parents appeared through the crowd, smiling and laughing. Just thinking about it now, I remember how that moment felt. I didn't feel that particular terror again until, as a dad, I lost my kid in a supermarket, or the mall, or worst of all, the beach. Then that same feeling would return to my stomach. There really is no worse feeling in the world than not knowing where your kid is. The panic growing inside you. Your thoughts racing to every possible horrific scenario. Playing out the scene where you tell your wife how you lost them. And then you find them. They're right there just looking at the Lego roller coaster in the window of the Lego store. And then they wonder why you're hugging them so hard. The Maynard Town Carnival was a big deal in my life as a kid. It came every summer and was only in town for a few days. We went usually at night when the multicolored flashing lights from the rides would light up the dusky summer sky. Those blinking lights and those sounds of delighted screaming and those smells of French fries and hot popcorn and fried dough made the place seem otherworldly and magical, far away from the ordinary town park where it took place. By the way, Crow Park was the scene of many a grade school moment of humiliation for me, as we often had gym class there when I attended St. Bridget's School from grades 1 through 8. And I was always put in far right field for the softball games, failing to catch any ball that was remotely hit my way. Usually one of the more athletic kids, upon seeing the ball heading toward me, would race to catch the ball from their place guarding first or second base and make a heroic diving catch right in front of me. Yeah, I had a lot more fun in Crow Park when the carnival was in town. One of the bigger attractions at the carnival for my sisters and I was something they called the Moonwalk. It was a big inflatable spaceship that you could jump around inside. It was what I later learned to call as a dad, a bouncy house. That Moonwalk was 5 minutes of the most fun I had all year. We went in, bounced our brains out for 5 minutes, and then we left. And then we waited for the carnival and the moonwalk to come back next year. My wife and I have, on several occasions, rented bouncy houses for our kids' birthday parties, which has meant my kids had access to them for an entire weekend. I have often watched my kids jumping in those bouncy houses for hours at a time and thought about my 5 minutes bouncing in the Maynard Town Carnival moonwalk once a year. You know, when I was a kid, we only did that for 5 minutes, and then we had to wait a whole year to do it again.
Okay, boomer.
I'm not a boomer. I'm Gen X.
Okay, boomer.
Oh, never mind. Before I leave the Maynard Town Carnival, I have to mention a ride that terrified me for many years. A ride with the ominous name, The Zipper.
No!
The Zipper was a series of two-person cages on a long beam that spun around and around, high into the air. But the really scary part was that the cages themselves spun independently, so you were spinning upside down while being simultaneously spun around on the larger axis. The screams coming out of the Zipper curdled my preteen blood, and I never went near that death trap. All I could ever think was that a screw would shake loose and one of those spinning cages would fly off into the night sky and crash high into a tree, where you'd be left bruised and dangling precariously 100 feet in the air. Yeah, no Zipper for me. But I did like the Ferris wheel. If you grew up in Maynard, Mass. In the 70s, that meant there was an excellent chance someone in your family worked at Digital Equipment Corporation. Which meant there was an equally excellent chance that you got to go to the highlight of every Maynard kid's existence, a fantasy come true known as the Digital Company Picnic, held every fall at Canobie Lake Park, an awesome amusement park in nearby Salem, New Hampshire. It's impossible to overstate how big a deal this was for me when I was a kid. DEC bought out the whole park, and all the rides were free. This event was as big as Christmas for me. I literally couldn't sleep the night before. I was so excited. We could go on the bumper cars over and over again, or the incredibly scary House of the Seven Gables, whose eerie witch's cackles you could hear from all over the park. The first time I ever went on a roller coaster, it was at Canobie Lake Park. I remember my dad sat next to me, which made me feel much safer. But I was not prepared for that terrifying first hill that you slowly climbed link by link in the roller coaster lift chain. Each clank echoing in my ears as we were inexorably pulled closer to certain death. Finally, we reached what seemed to my 9-year-old eyes to be a summit as high as Mount Everest. Then, that first dizzying drop, seemingly straight down. I remember shutting my eyes and smashing my back as hard as I could into my seat and turning my face away from the drop, all in a useless attempt to keep myself from falling straight down into the abyss. My dad saying, "Ho!" next to me, looking at me as he often did with a combination of concern and amusement. A couple of years ago, I brought my boys onto that same roller coaster. It's called the Yankee Cannonball, and it's been at Canobie Lake Park since 1936. It wasn't nearly as big as I remembered, but it was still a lot of fun. I still got the butterflies in my stomach as we went up that first hill, though. All in all, I think my boys were a lot braver than I was. I blame today's violent video games for desensitizing them from scary things. Yeah, that must be it. From somewhere in heaven above, I could almost hear my dad saying, "Ho!" and then smiling at my boys, and then looking at me with a combination of concern and amusement. "I'm fine, Dad. Why are you looking at me like that?" So, it's pretty well established that my wife is significantly cooler than I am. I've also been told she's way out of my league by more than one guy. A not that veiled insult that I never know how to react to. You think my wife is hot? And too hot for me? Why double thank you, my observant friend? Anyway, she is definitely cooler than me. She went to art school. She's a way better dancer. She has a tattoo. One of the funnier impressions my wife does is my mom discovering for the first time that she had a tattoo, which is behind her ear, in case you're wondering. So my mom was just sitting with my wife one day before we were married and noticed the tattoo and just blurted out, as only my mom could do, "Allison, you have a tattoo." My mom wasn't a truck driver, but she had kind of a husky voice. And she probably literally never met anyone who had a tattoo before she met my wife, besides the sailor she dated in 1957, and things did not end well between her and that creepy sailor. Anyway, my wife is way cooler than me. Therefore, one of the things I love most about her is how much she loves going to Disney World. It's amazing to me that she gets so much joy every time we bring our boys there. My wife has the amazing ability to filter out what everyone else thinks and just form her own opinions. And as far as Disney World, my cool wife is all in. I can't tell you how many times I've been in conversations with other parents. You know, and not while we're doing something uber cool like hanging at 2 a.m. in a swanky New York City night spot, but more like doing something uber dorky like hanging around the campfire during a Cub Scout campout. We'll all be hanging out and all the Cub Scouts are running around the woods with their flashlights, poking each other in the eye with sticks and taking baths in the poison ivy bushes. And back up at the campfire, one of the parents, probably me, will bring up Disney World. And suddenly, 50% of the parents roll their eyes like I just mentioned going to see Barney on Ice.
"Oh, you'll never get me to Disney World. Oh, I guess we'll have to go someday. Yeah, I'm just gonna send my wife while I go golfing."
Back off, Disney haters. Going to Disney World is likely going to be one of the most significant and memorable events in your kid's life. And they're gonna smile and feel about 1,000 times happier and more excited than all the times you dragged them to the opera or read the Shakespeare sonnets to them out loud or tried to get them interested in playing the oboe or fencing or whatever more highbrow activity you'd prefer they do. We've been to Disney World 3 times with our kids. And we actually went to Disneyland once when we had just 2 kids. That's when I traumatized my then 5-year-old son by dragging him onto the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, which looked too scary to him. No, I said, come on the ride, and it's not that scary, and if you get scared, you can hide under my jacket. So we got into the little boat, and as soon as we took off down that dark tunnel and heard water rushing, I realized there was a small but kind of scary waterfall right at the beginning of the ride. So he stuck his head inside my jacket and never poked his head back out until the ride ended. Oops. You never know with kids. His 3-year-old brother loved that ride, and he even giggled when the pirates shot the cannonballs at us. I remember being terrified of the Haunted Mansion when I was 9, and we went to the then pretty new Disney World Park in Florida. When that room reveals itself to be an elevator, and it gets dark, and you hear all those spooky sounds, I was holding my dad's hand so hard, I'm surprised neither of us needed a cast when that ride ended. Years later, I walked out of that ride with my own terrified son after the elevator room experience. They have an emergency exit for the scaredy cats. Now that same son plays video games that would make Charles Manson ask for his teddy bear. One of my wife and I's favorite things to do when in the Magic Kingdom is to go have dinner in the Beast's castle. Oh, that's nice you're saying. You love giving your children the magical experience of dining in an enchanted castle and singing along with the Disney classic song Be Our Guest and meeting the beloved characters Belle and Beast. Yeah, all that stuff's great, but what first drove us to that particular dining venue is that it literally is the only place in the entire Magic Kingdom where Mommy and Daddy can get a drink. And let me tell you, after a day in the hot sun and overstimulation and meltdowns, and I know we just waited in line to see Mickey for an hour, but now I decided that Mickey is a terrifying giant mouse. Mommy and Daddy definitely need a drink. Also, the hats are always a big deal at Disney World. Mickey Mouse ear hats, baseball hats with an understated Mickey Mouse silhouette for the family hipster, and of course now Star Wars hats of all kinds. In my mind, I'll always think of my 14-year-old, 6'1" son as being about 8 years old and wearing one of those amazing Donald Duck hats. You know, with the huge hat brim that's Donald's beak that actually quacks when you squeeze it. His little face beaming out from under that giant hat brim, Disney magic in his eyes, and chocolate ice cream all over his face. I remember being quite proud of the hat I got on my trip to Disney World back in 1974. It had a long blue feather plume that stuck straight up in the air. It made me feel like one of the Three Musketeers. I had that hat maybe an hour or two, and then it flew off my head on a ride and it landed in a completely inaccessible place. I asked my dad for another hat, but there wasn't the money for second chance hats in my family. I still miss that stupid hat. I'm going to take a quick break now for a word from this week's fake sponsor, Disney World's Tom Sawyer Island. That's right, the most analog, untechy, unflashy thing to do at Disney World. I loved Tom Sawyer Island when I went there in 1974, and I loved it every time I went with my wife and my boys in the last few years. No matter how crowded the park is, it seems like you can always walk right onto one of those floating rafts and get transported to this magical island. The raft ride is always fun, and if you're lucky, you'll see the Liberty Bell riverboat go by. That Mark Twain-era paddle-wheel steamboat always reminds me of the 1970s TV series The New Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, a show that aired as part of the Banana Split Show. It always ended with Tom, Huck, and Becky smiling and waving from the deck of a steamboat. I wanted so much to be there on that steamboat with them. Once you arrive at the island, head straight into the caves where you'll suddenly cool off from the blazing Orlando sun. I remember having to convince my little guys that it was safe in those caves and telling them that I'd be right with them the whole way. Nothing makes you feel more like a dad than leading your little one through a scary place. I wish I could do it their whole lives. I know, college is scary, just hold my hand. I know, job interviews are scary, just hold my hand. Yeah, getting married is scary, just hold my hand. Yeah, global pandemics and the collapse of the economy and civil anarchy and unrest and asteroid close calls and murder hornets and melting polar ice caps and Adam Levine's tattoos during the Super Bowl halftime show. Yes, they're all scary. Just hold my hand. I'll be right there with you. Pretty much all you do on Tom Sawyer Island is follow the paths that meander all around. There's a great little playground there, which is shady and a very welcome respite from the overstimulation all around you. There are times when you've got young kids, when all you want in life, where you'd pay $1,000 cash for a playground to let your kids romp around while you sit on a shady bench and blissfully occupy that twilight of half-awake, half-asleep netherworld that every exhausted parent occupies 24 hours a day. Tom Sawyer Island is a living testament to the fact that kids don't need much to have fun. Walt Disney actually designed Tom Sawyer Island himself in 1957 for the Disneyland Park in California. I love that it's remained essentially unchanged for over 50 years. I hope it's here for another 100. Tom Sawyer Island. Book your trip today. And when you're standing on that raft, wave at the steamboat in the distance. Tell your kids if they look close, they might see Tom, Huck, and Becky waving back. And if you like this fake ad, Disney World, hey, feel free to give me a magical day and make it a real one. The first time we brought our four boys to Disney World, we had a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and twin 2-year-olds. Wow, I can't believe we actually left the house, let alone got on an airplane. I do know that prior to leaving, my ingenious wife actually sewed harnesses on the twins' backpacks that we could attach dog leashes to. And yes, we walked our 2-year-old twins through all Disney World's parks while they strained like Cocker Spaniels at the ends of their dog leashes. Oh yeah, there it is. I can hear it. The not-so-silent judgment, the parental shaming, the righteous condemnation. How could you put a leash on your child? Well, very easily, actually. You just pull the little metal thing back and you clip it right onto the metal ring sewn into their Buzz Lightyear backpack. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. No one got lost, no one got trampled, no one got scared. And my twins perfected their Cocker Spaniel imitations over the course of the week. It was a win-win. It was on that first trip to Disney World that I made a huge dad mistake that still stings to this day. Wanting to get as much time in Disney World as possible, I booked the only direct flight available, which I believed left from New York's LaGuardia Airport around 8 a.m. It was ambitious since we had 4 young kids to wrangle, and LaGuardia is a good hour drive from our house. But, ever the optimist, I booked it, with thoughts of lunch in Disney World together as a family dancing in my head. After a series of setbacks, too typical to mention, we wound up getting to the airport check-in about 20 minutes to spare. Just barely enough time to run through the uncrowded security and sprint to the gate. However, we were well past time to check our bags. So in about 10 seconds, my wife and I had to decide whether we would all take a later flight or one of us should hang back with the bags and the rest should go on. One of my favorite movies is Michael Mann's Last of the Mohicans. There's a scene where Daniel Day-Lewis realizes that they're about to be captured by some really nasty bad guys. If he stays and fights, he'll be killed because there's too many of them. So he makes the heart-wrenching decision to leave Madeline Stowe, who he's fallen madly in love with. The idea being that he'll live and then come back and rescue her on another day. They're all hiding deep in a cave behind a raging waterfall, and they can see the torches of the bad guys who are hunting them getting closer and closer through the falling water. And then he looks at her and he says, "No matter where you are, I will find you. Just stay alive. No matter what, and I will find you." And then he grabs his musket and he jumps through the waterfall just before all the bad guys come in and they grab Madeline Stowe and her little sister. And that's exactly how I felt standing at the American Airlines desk at LaGuardia that morning. "Honey, you go on. Get to Disney World. Stay alive. No matter what, I will find you." And just like that, they all went through security, and I was suddenly and profoundly alone. And to be totally honest with you, I cried. I was devastated that what had started out as one of the happiest mornings of our family's life had been so rudely snatched away. I was mad, and I was sad, and most of all, furious at myself for not leaving earlier. And I was worried about my wife, alone on that plane with 2-year-old twins and 2 other young boys to manage all by herself. The next flight was 2 hours later, and it went to Miami, with like a 2-hour layover, and then it landed in Orlando about 4 hours after my wife and kids landed. I finally arrived late in the afternoon to an exhausted wife, just waking up from a nap, and four kids bouncing off the walls of the hotel room. We went right into the pool at Saratoga Springs Disney Resort and commenced with what would become one of the most memorable vacations of our lives, albeit after a rocky start. I tend to leave ridiculously early now whenever we all have to catch a flight. A few years ago, I did a TV commercial for a healthcare system that used kind of beautiful cinematic metaphors to depict the most challenging times in people's lives. So to show a woman battling cancer, we made a film about a woman in a boxing ring being pummeled by an unseen opponent and then knocking out her invisible enemy. And to dramatize the ups and downs of a couple having a baby, we showed a young couple running up and down the tracks of a gigantic wooden roller coaster. It struck me recently that we've all been that young couple lately, thrust onto a roller coaster we did not buy a ticket for, forced to run up and down the tracks, reaching dizzying heights of happiness and then crashing back down to earth. We're all on that ride right now. And the thing is, unlike an amusement park, this ride has no defined end. It keeps going up and down, over and under, around and around. Where it stops, literally, nobody knows. All we can do right now is grab somebody's hand and hold on tight. Days will get brighter. Things will get better. And someday, we'll all gather in amusement parks and rock concerts and baseball games and July 4th fireworks displays. Someday soon, I hope. The scariest thing we'll have to face is that first endless hill of an old wooden roller coaster. That's all for this week's episode of The Many Meanderings of the First Gen X Man. I'd like to thank you all very much for listening. Please tell your friends, Gen X and otherwise. Right now, we're well past 1,100 downloads, which is very exciting. We've got listeners on every continent, including Africa. Hey, what's up, Seychelles Island fans? And it seems at least one loyal listener just outside of Paris. Bonjour, mon ami. And we're starting to get some nice reviews. Monica writes on Apple Podcasts, love the inaugural, can't wait for the next. And she gave us 5 stars. And over on CastBox, Mark says, surprisingly funny. Will has an easy manner and his memories hit home. Oh, thank you, Mark. Exceeding low expectations has been one of my trademarks for most of my life. Also on CastBox, way back on May 16th, Kellyanne wrote, totally hilarious and relatable for those of us in the middle child generation. If you like what you heard today, please consider giving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you really, really liked it, please write a review and I'll give you a shout out on our next episode. I'd like to thank this week's fake sponsor, Disney World's Tom Sawyer Island. We'll see you again someday, Tom Sawyer Island. And as always, enormous thanks to Watt White for our show's theme music. I'm Will Boudreau, and I'll see you when we meander again.
The many meanderings of the first Gen X man.
Excellent.